Hello, everyone. I am Rillian, your host for the Narnia Web Council, the official NarniaWeb.com podcast. We've got a really interesting episode today. I think this is episode 70. The numbers are racking up now. So today we have Warrior for Jesus. Hello, Warrior.
Hi, Rillian. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. And Glumpuddle, welcome back.
Back after missing the trailer analysis.
Yes, although I have to plug your YouTube video, which trailer analysis part one at least is released so far, and I highly encourage you all to go watch it. It's really great. It's really funny. You should all watch it. And finally, last but not least, we have Dr. Elwyn Ransom with us. Hello, Dr. Ransom.
Hello. Good to be here back with everyone again.
I know it's been a while. Well, we have a very interesting quote today. And we'll see if the quote causes technical difficulties, because it seems like there's a negative aura or some deep, dark magic.
We're recording.
It's a dream.
You're recording. Everything's going great. Rillian starts reading the quote. Bang! Internet's gone.
Yeah.
All right. Sea serpent.
But this quote has it's really philosophical. It gets into really more than just the Dawn Treader, more of what it kind of a direction that might be going on with the films 3 and 4, The Silver Chair. And, well, it's really interesting. I'm saying that in a very neutral light. My opinion will be revealed later.
Interesting. And actually, I've heard it described a number of ways. Interesting
is
one of them, I guess.
From Satan could be another. from Tash, sorry. From Tash. I should not have said that, but anyway.
The interesting Tash.
The interesting Tash. There were two threads on Narnia Web that were discussing this, but I'll go ahead and read it, and we'll start off with that and then get into the discussion. This was an interview with the director, Michael Apted, and in this interview he says, and I quote, "We were able to steal, really, from the book C.S. Lewis didn't write, which is the one that would have gone between the Dawn Treader and the Silver Chair. He starts the Silver Chair with the witches building up an army underground to attack the above world, and Caspian having married the blue star of,
it's hard to read.
The blue star of an old man, having married the blue star, daughter of Romandu, basically, and Caspian is an old man with a son, and he married the blue star of Romandu. In other words, a lot of things had happened between the books, so there were elements that we were able to draw out of that non-existent story and inject into this story to give it a bit more sense of purpose. And the C.S. Lewis estate didn't seem to mind that, because there was a big hole in the story, if you're going to be literal about it. Whereas Star Wars and Harry Potter are a bit more attentive to that flowing stream of franchise narrative, Mr. Lewis wasn't so keen on it, but it enabled us to find a stronger reason for the journey, since there is no real reason for the journey as it stands."
Okay, that was a mouthful.
Indeed.
So we'll definitely have to include that quote in the podcast description so that you can read it.
Yeah, indeed.
Make what you want of it.
Yeah, well, I first heard about this just Glumpuddle, you called me, left a voicemail on my mobile.
Yes, and this time last time I left you a voicemail, I like made it sound like it was a lot worse than it was. So this time I was careful to say what it was. And I was just like, I don't know what to think right now. I'm not feeling good. Call me. I need a shoulder to cry on right now. And then I posted the story. So I did. Before posting the story, I felt like I had to sort of take a moment, just kind of collect myself emotionally.
Yeah, well, you were trying to collect yourself emotionally. Warrior, what was your first response?
Confusion. And I was like, as everyone else has been saying, it's this idea of what's canon and what's fan fiction, and this seems to be leaning towards fan fiction. Like, my initial reaction is, we've been hearing so much about how Michael Apted understands the story, understands the themes, understands what it's all about. But calling Romandu's daughter the Blue Star, just, I don't know, it's like something out of a 80s fantasy movie.
Or out of an early draft of a script, maybe.
Or that,
ooh,
yeah.
I wonder what you're talking about.
I don't know.
It seems to reflect the leaked script more than I thought it would.
Stargirl, and... Squee.
Yeah, I don't know. It's confusing. I think there's no... That C.S. Lewis didn't explore those stories because they didn't need to be told. They're more powerful in the if you just use your imagination to what happened there. We get a story as a snippet in time. We're not meant to know everything. That's my feeling.
Yeah. How about you, Ransom?
Well, I had two initial reactions. The first one was to scream in a fashion reminiscent of Gollum. At the beginning of Two Towers, when he's caught, I now have a signature image of Gollum screaming. He's in agony because of the Apted quote. My second reaction was a combination of trying to give Michael Apted the benefit of the doubt and at the same time coming up with other things that might have been in the book C.S. Lewis didn't write. What other boundless wisdom could be in this heretofore undiscovered manuscript? I came up with a few quotes such as, aim for heaven and you will get earth thrown in. Aim for chronological snobbery with classic stories and you will get money.
Well, I mean, before we really get into a lot of the potential negative spinoffs of this, because there's a lot of things that people have talked about. First, let's talk about what we think is really fundamentally wrong with this idea of filling in what's between the books. And
I think Apted himself, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Glumpuddle, you articulated it very well when we were chatting that day, and why don't you give, kind of say what you say, and then I'll give my opinion on it. Because I want to get at this really, at the heart of this, before we get into other things like... that you know, people where the you know, the threads have gone
right.
And such like that.
Okay, well, the main thing I was just saying is that, you know, okay, I'm agreeing with Apted here. It's like, yeah, it's true. Lewis didn't seem as worried about connecting the stories, and there was a lot that we know happened but wasn't shown. And whereas Apted seems to think that's a problem, my reaction is, yeah, that's really interesting. It's really it's really cool how we just get glimpses of stories, of the one story that we're – that he's telling, I'm sorry, he's telling, like, you know, the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, we'll get glimpses of other stories in our peripheral vision. It really gives the story a sense of depth. And now, like there's a couple times, like in Dawn Treader, for example, there's a part where he says, you know, by the way, I've never heard how the Lone Islands came under Narnian possession, but if I ever hear about it, I'll have to put it in another book somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then there's things like, you know, like why does the picture in the bedroom suck them into Narnia? It's never explained, you know? However, he does explain one of them. He does explain how the wardrobe gets to Narnia. The fact that he explained that one makes you kind of go, well, gosh, there must be a really interesting, complicated backstory associated with all the other ones too. So it just creates this magic of, wow, of possibility. And again, it's more about the fact that this is just, okay, we're going to tell the story of Dawn Treader and only what's relevant to Dawn Treader. Now we're going to skip ahead and tell what's relevant to the Silver Chair. And, like, you know, Caspian marrying Romandu, his daughter. That is,
Keep going.
Maybe I'll have to call her that, even though I've kind of been refraining from doing that. But
Say that again.
Important of a plot point to Dawn Treader. And I think it's intriguing the fact that, again, we just get glimpses of other stories in our peripheral vision. It gives it the whole story the sense of depth and reality. Eustace, when he gets in the Silver Chair, when he finds out, oh, so much time has passed and Caspian's an old man, has this really emotional reaction to it. And that's interesting. I can't think of another series that does that. And now it seems like they're kind of robbing the series of what makes it unique, or one of the unique things about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that this gets into – I mean, I point this out to people. Lewis was someone who understood history. He understood – he was, you know, kind of a polymath, but he understood history. He understood literature. And in history books, you don't explain everything.
Mm-hmm.
Good history books have a focus, and they take that focus and they expound upon that focus. And you have – like you said, Glumpuddle, you have little things like he'll mention – have a brief mentioning of, you know, the Lone Islands or someone freeing the Lone Islands from a dragon. And he'll mention, you know, he has a mention of the story of Aravis and King Kor of Arkenland. And that one he tells about. And I think that you have when you tell a chronicle, you have this understanding. Look, these things happened. You have a confidence that I can mention something, and it has its own weight, and it can support itself just by mentioning it. You don't have to go in to explain everything. And this is something I was actually surprised to see that was kept in the Lord of the Rings films, because they will mention Beren and Lúthien. They will mention, they'll have a little design somewhere of some hero fighting a creature or something, just something in the background just to give it more weight. And, it's this understanding that, especially I got the feeling when I got, as I was reading the books as a child, or the books were being read to me, especially when you get into The Horse and His Boy, you realize, wow, look how many amazing, amazing, incredible adventures they must have had, and we only get this one.
It just gives the story the sense of depth that, wow, there must be so many stories going on. And if you explain too much, it makes the world seem finite, just what we're seeing. By not explaining some things, it's like, wow, there's so many things going on. It's like a real world, and we're just getting a glimpse of it.
You leave the audience. You let the audience fill in the gaps, and that's what you do for an intelligent audience.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Less is more, and I think that the problem is something that you identified earlier, really, and you called it a philosophical difference, that the quote really kind of cuts to a philosophical difference between the book and perhaps, it's sounding like, without qualification, the movie adaptation. And it also becomes something that I want to be really cautious, and I don't want this to sound mean when I use C.S. Lewis's phrase, chronological snobbery. There was a little of that in the last film, and even a little bit less in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. It wasn't too bad, but it's a very subtle attitude that goes like, "Hey, we're too cool for this stuff. We need to put in some modern stuff. We're in on the joke. This is just a nice little story, but we need to make it more like Star Wars or Harry Potter."
We're trying to make it more like Harry Potter. He basically admitted it.
That's kind of the giveaway there. And I Star Wars, and I like Harry Potter even more. That's Star Wars, and that's Harry Potter. Let them be them, and let Narnia be Narnia. We'll do Lewis's thing over here, or something at least similar to Lewis's vision, and then let them do their thing. Why can't we just try to tell the story, maybe punched up a little bit. I don't mind some filling out the details. They did some of that in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't mind changing the order of the islands around. Heck, I could even get used to the Seven Swords, maybe Stargirl if I was really relaxed. But to revise things to this extent, it just... At the very least, I'd like to hear a qualification going, here's what I meant by that. Here's what I did not mean. Mm-hmm. And we are going to try to meet the themes of the book. We're not just trying to be another Star Wars, and we're not trying to be Harry Potter, where all these details mesh together. We have all these little subplots where everything's got to connect, and we have to imitate the other guy. I would just like to see a little bit of that, more of that in the trailer and in some of the quotes we've been hearing about the film thus far.
Yeah, you just wish that the aim would be to make something different, not rehash something that's already been done.
Well, Warrior, what are your thoughts? Warrior, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, I was thinking, I agree that in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and Prince Caspian, they did flesh out some areas like why some characters reacted the way they did, or just making the world a bit more grounded, the world of Narnia and all that, a bit more grounded, but there's a difference between that and changing the drive of the story, the focus of the story, which is what seems to be happening here in Voyage of the Dawn Treader. There's just that's what's so controversial, I think. Not the fleshing out of the world, but changing a large part of the driving force, the theme of the story.
Exactly. I like that term, driving force. That's exactly what I'm worried about.
Well, another term for that is used in novels and such is meta-narrative. You need to understand your meta-narrative. You can play with the subplots a little bit, but there's at least three main meta-narratives in the Voyage of the Dawn Treader that have to be adhered to, or else it's not Voyage of the Dawn Treader. There is obviously Aslan's Country, Reaper Chief's mm-hmm. Quest, and Eustace's Conversion. If they get those yes. three right and make them the main thing, you can't just kind of give a polite nod and a salute in that yeah. direction and go off on a quest yeah. for seven swords. Please. I don't mind the seven swords, Mr. Apted. I know you're listening, but if you could just make sure to keep the main thing, it's like opening the Bible and getting all lost about trying to figure out who the Nephilim are from Genesis 6 instead of, oh yeah, there's this whole flood there. You know, let's keep the main story the main story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially since even something like Star Wars, well, the original three had that kind of, hey, I don't have to explain everything to you.
Yeah.
Which was something I really respected about.
The midi-chlorians, for example.
Exactly, exactly. which just made it really stupid. But, you know, the fact that I remember, I finally, a few years ago, watched the commentaries on Star Wars, which was really interesting. The original trilogy, and you know, Lucas mentions that you know it was very intentional to put parsecs in for to talk about how fast something was, but when it's actually a unit of time, and he goes into it actually makes sense the way he
that's the whole point, he hinted things but not explain them. They were just there. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just there. Well,
that's
part of
the logic of a fairy tale. That's how fairy tale works. If you try to explain everything. Getting in science fiction, hard
you kill
science.
The magic.
Exactly.
You kill the magic, you've violated your own genre.
You don't buy your child an iPod and say, "Hey, look, here's an iPod. It's an MP3 device. Of course, it also plays AAC, and it'll do video, and it'll." I mean, you don't have to. But I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the reaction, because I was surprised. In some ways, I was not surprised that the trailer, I felt, got an overall positive reaction on NarniaWeb, but it seemed like the reception to this quote has been a lot more mixed.
Yeah. Really? I think it's been largely quite negative. It's definitely been, glancing through the thread, there I can only find one or two positive quotes.
You're right. It is a lot. Okay, yeah. I mean, fair enough. It is a lot more negative, and I would probably say more negative than positive.
I think definitely. Every so often, because I think in the trailer, going through the thread on the trailer, you could go through it and every so often find someone who was like, oh, I don't know if I like this, I like this. Here you go through this thread, there's a couple people saying, I don't know if I want to see this anymore. Like MM1991, she's just decided, I'm not going to go see this movie, basically. Like, they've ruined it for me. And I'm like, wow, they feel betrayed. And I'm just like, wow, I don't recall seeing a lot of that.
I would encourage people to go ahead and see the film. It looks like they're going to get some things right. I wouldn't throw it all out just based on this quote. I don't think this quote makes anything better or worse after we've already seen the most recent trailer. My view remains the same. It's a little bit more firmed up in what I think has been the basis of the adaptation. I'm not too happy about that, but at least at this point, that doesn't mean I'm going to bail on the whole film.
Sure. I mean, you have some things like King Tyrion said, he said, this seems very true, and if the CSO's estate wanted to go along with it, and then it doesn't bother me one bit. But then there's all kinds of things that apparently...
Apparently the kiss was estate approved, or they allowed it, at least.
Yeah, so...
But was it more of a matter of saying, we can continue to make the movies, but we're going to make some changes, we're not going to make the movies if we can't make these changes? Mm-hmm. Was that choice two very different?
That was the last time we heard from Douglas Gresham, was basically him saying that they came to him and said, okay, they're making these changes, and okay, we have to make these changes or we can't make a Don Treader movie. And he said, well, okay, then go and do it. And we haven't really heard anything from Gresham since, which is interesting, because I recall getting just a couple interviews here and there of Gresham talking about, yeah, we made some changes to Prince Caspian, but it's okay. It's all in the spirit of the book. And he's been very silent this past year.
Mm-hmm.
I was weird. For those of us who pray, I just want to say real quick that I cannot imagine the difficult position that Gresham is in. It's so personal, and yet he also needs to approach it from a bit of a more pragmatic angle than any of us can afford. It just, you know, say a prayer for Douglas Gresham. It may seem strange. He's a big celebrity, but he's a real person with real concerns in trying to work around all of this.
Right. And I'm just saying, I just wonder what that tells us, the fact that he hasn't been very public in his support.
That is true.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I will just say, kind of to end on this, just the philosophical note of this, that jumped out at me was when he says, "No reason or no real reason for the journey as it stands."
Is that all about?
Aslan's country. Let's discover what's at the end of the world. It's wonderful.
Seven lords.
It's magical.
Seven lords.
Wow, look, the seven lords. There's that. Let's regain our honor. That's the key. That's the key, gentlemen. That is the key. I don't think they really understand the medieval style, the fantasy style concept of honor. I think that's been substituted for other values, more modern values, and that's where you bring in some very mild chronological snobbery going on.
Yeah, I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's simplest. It sounds like he hasn't read the beginning of chapter 2, where Caspian very clearly explains the purpose of their voyage. And I think Daughter of the King summed it up pretty well. It's just no reason for the voyage, you know, like five question marks, head desk. That's kind of like, what? You know,
there's many reasons for the voyage. Maybe you don't like the reasons that are there. Maybe you don't think they'll sell. Oh boy, we're going to find seven lords that we haven't even introduced two third stories before.
I mean,
we've got to add in some mystical glowing swords to make it an object oriented fantasy trope. Hoorah!
Yeah. Well, you're very right. Let me say something and then. Because I've got the book open, actually. And then, Warrior, you jump in. Summarizing.
Forgive me.
Caspian says, and he says, everything in Narnia is going swimmingly, you know, for one thing. So it's not like everyone's in peril. And he points out that on his coronation day, he swore an oath. And he is fulfilling his oath. That's why he's doing this. If you make a promise, you swear an oath, you fulfill it. That's not something that – and this is something where I kind of wondered, you know, this is would not surprise me if Lewis maybe decided to just add this in after Prince Caspian. I'm trying to remember at what points he wrote and published each book and when he had time to go back and change things. But I was kind of wondering if maybe they would – I don't know. At the beginning of the Prince Caspian project, I thought, I wonder if they'll include this. But that's kind of irrelevant.
They could have forecasted the next movie that way.
Well,
they could have tied them together.
Yeah. Warrior, you were going to say something, and then I want to move on to something else.
Yeah, sure. I was just going to say that I think these sort of movies do best when they draw from the original sources, in that Lewis drew from largely from Greek mythology and obviously Christianity and all that. But The Voyage of Dawn Treader has a very much a Homer's Odyssey sort of feel to it. Draw from that instead of trying to make it a video game style movie or whatever. If you need to bring it all together in one package, tie all the episodic natures together, why not take this idea of the discovery, searching for the lost lords in the process of trying to find Aslan's country? There's so much there that you can explore without having to look for it in a book that C.S. Lewis never wrote.
There's another quote. Someone in the forums, Patter Twig's pal, asked something that really I kind of wondered about as well. He says, "I'm also wondering if." Well, actually, it just occurred to me, Patter Twig's pal could be a girl.
I think she is.
Patter Twig's pal. Patter Twig's pal. Patter Twig's pal.
I've done that before. Yes.
Sorry, Patter Twig's pal said, "I'm also wondering if witches." Plural was supposed to be witch's possessive form,
singular.
And just going back to the quote, he says,
and this is the reason why it's so hard analyzing this quote, because we're wondering, did he really mean that? Was there a transcription error? Did he say it and it came out wrong?
He says he starts the silver chair with the witches building up an army underground to attack the above world.
But it's,
the reason why I think it is a transcription error is because later on there is a very obvious, and Caspian having married the blue star of something is an old man with the sun. And you can tell there's been the director like started and then stopped and then began another thought.
If you put that in the singular form, though, that doesn't make any sense. It's totally like if you'd say it's witches singular. That it's witches building up an army. What does that mean?
Well, here's the thing, Glumpuddle. I'm just trying to keep this within the realm of possibility here. You know, if you say something like, if you're just going off the top of your head, you can say things like that because he could have said, he starts with the witches having built up an army underground. In that, you could say it like that, and it is singular and grammatically correct.
It is hard, yes. I have transcribed a number of audio interviews for RunnyWeb in my time, and yeah, occasionally it is like, you know, someone will say something where you would never write it that way, and it's kind of difficult to find out a way to put that in, you know, print form and make it have the same meaning.
And I imagine the same thing would happen with our podcast. I'm guessing that what he meant to say was like, he starts the silver chair with the witch is, so perhaps there was a pause there. He starts the silver chair with long dash, the witch is building up an army underground. You'd have to actually hear it in order to get the nuance there, whatever he was meaning. I don't think he meant like two, three witches.
Indicate like Bookworm says that. The lady, I'm just going to say it, that the white witch, the lady of the green kettle are going to be like a tag team.
No.
Don't jinx it. No, don't do that. No, really, don't.
I have to say, you know, next time we do an April Fool's joke,
no,
I'm just going to try to predict exactly where I think they're going, and it'll be so ridiculous.
They'll
so ridiculous. No one will believe it.
I just thought, the quote about the witches building an army underground to attack the above world, it seemed like it combined the idea of some element of the ending of the Silver Chair along with this idea of the story of Chan, you know, in The Magician's Nephew. The battle going on there between the Jadis and their sister and whatever. It just confused me.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, Warrior, do you think that they're trying to continue the witch as an object of villainy throughout at least the first four books, films here?
I think so. No, not in the physical sense, definitely in the, I guess, the overriding idea of that this lingering evil, whether it's physical or metaphysical or whatever, but I think that's definitely there. I just don't think she's going to be coming back in physical form as such, hopefully. I don't know. I don't want to see her as the White Witch. I mean, sorry, as the Lady of the Green Kettle.
Well, I'm almost wondering if, I mean, I really thought that they would just have Tilda Swinton, you know, playing the White Witch, maybe taking on a different form, and I'm wondering, wait a minute, are they going to have her, you know, like, you know, two Sith, the other is like the master and protege, and I don't know, it's so weird, but Glumpuddle, I'll let you give your spiel here, and then Dr. Ransom, but Glumpuddle, what text did I send you? I think I maybe already mentioned it on the podcast.
Yeah, I think you did. Just said, I was walking to class, and I get a text message that says, Tilda Swinton is going to play the Lady at the Green Kirtle, count on it. Which made me freak out because I thought, oh, was there some piece of news or something? I called you and you're like, no, no piece of news. I just think it's going to happen. And it is kind of scary when you look at this. You talk about them after it's talking about them wanting to connect the stories more. And we already have in the leaked script, they're actually bringing the Lady of the Green Kirtle into it. And maybe it just sounds like they're taking a step back from that and saying, okay, well, maybe she's not in this movie, but we'll set her up a little bit. Then they'll have a like Bookworm called it, a tag team between the Lady of the Green Kirtle and the White Witch. Again, and also we're always talking about trying to squeeze Tilda Swinton into every movie, and this seems like a really easy way to do that. So it's really it's terrifying is what it is.
Dr. Ransom?
Well, I believe really you said something in the last podcast about how nobody wants to knock Tilda Swinton. I think she is a genius. She was the perfect White Witch, took everyone by surprise. You watch the behind-the-scenes documentaries in The Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe, and there she is actually helping them design her dress and figure out the costume concepts and everything. She obviously enjoyed it a lot, and so on one level, it makes sense to try to bring her back. You have a high-profile actor connected to the series. What, she was nominated for an Academy Award, I believe. I'm trying to remember exactly what that was. But at the same time, The Chronicles of Narnia is not Harry Potter. You cannot have the same villain in every single story. That's not what The Chronicles of Narnia is about. And I think the worst problem is something that you all were talking about before, is that obviously Aslan didn't pounce hard enough. It just seems to detract somewhat from Aslan's power. Like, does he not know how to finish off a witch? Is there a spirit world of Narnia? You know, is there a parallel dimension where the witch is floating around? I mean, they open it up, you know, a little bit wider, actually a lot wider than the book did when they were doing the sorcery attempt in Prince Caspian. And we may have thought, okay, well, you can understand where you promised this big special effect and you can't just pull back, you know, just kidding. It doesn't work as well for movies. It does for a book. But now it seems to have left it too wide open to at least the point where everyone's a little freaked out going like, is the witch again? You know, come on, let her die. We love to hate her. Past tense. That's another villain because that's what the other books did. And it just gets a little spiritually wacky, and you know, you're gonna have some Christian viewers, especially going, wait a minute, you know, I was already letting the kids watch a movie with the witch. Now it's, you know, and that was fine, but now she keeps coming back, and what's that about? That was in the books.
I found a friend over at my house not too long ago who had never he'd never read any of the books, and I was kind of surprised, but he said, "No, I've never read any of the books, but." He said, "I think he might still be able to go to heaven, Dr. Ransom." You know, just saying. He said, "I really liked the first two movies of Chronicles of Narnia." He said, "I really liked those movies." I said, "Oh, I want you to watch the trailer for the third film." And I didn't really tell him anything about how I was feeling. I just said, "Here, watch this trailer." He watched it, and he said, "Yeah, exactly." He said, "Huh." This looks really good. I want to see it. But why does the White Witch just keep coming back? Isn't she going to die?
There we go. And that's going to be many other people's reaction.
Well, I'm going to allow us to all give our final thoughts. But before that, I just want to kind of start that off with quoting Clive Staples Sibelius from the forums, who says, "It's clear now that this movie is not an adaptation. It's an aptidation."
Aptidation, my new favorite word.
Aptidation. And Warrior, let's start with you. What are you kind of making of all this as you go forward?
I'm trying to keep positive, but I really all these conflicting quotes and everything. I think I just have to go in there and see it for myself, knowing how big a fan I am of Narnia and C.S. Lewis, and not getting it secondhand information from anyone else, just seeing it firsthand. I think that would be the best. And then throughout, yes, do I like it or don't I? Was it a good adaptation or not? Like, work it out for myself, I think, yeah. Because if we take it as it is, it's really easy to get pressed. But I don't, yeah, I think we should just try. Yeah.
Well, here's my two cents. And I can kind of sum it up pretty quickly, I think. This does not change my outlook towards Voyage of the Dawn Treader. With everything we've seen, discussed, this really does not change my outlook of Voyage of the Dawn Treader. But at no point, with all the little individual micro changes, like the Suspian or the Melting River, nothing really we've seen has made – they made me question how good that film will be. But nothing ever really shook my faith in the adaptation of all of the Chronicles as a whole. Everything I seem to read seemed to apply to one film. And now, that for the first time, I've seen something that is, I think, in memory here, branching out to an overall philosophy about how to approach the Chronicles. And I'm not liking what I'm seeing. Yeah. How about you, Dr. Ransom, and then Glumpuddle, you get to close us out here.
And I believe the word philosophy is very apt, not apted, apt. Here. it is a very different approach to not just this story, but I think just any story. A lot of people have this approach, yet the smartest scriptwriters will understand that it is best to adapt a book faithfully. And the approach that we're seeing here seems to be kind of more of the same that were, for me, the downer parts of the first two films. An approach that says, we've got to figure out how to change this source material for a modern audience. And recently, I was reading a article in a Christian magazine about how Prince Caspian, in particular, while they had to change the story, had made all kinds of alterations and had completely failed to understand Lewis's approach toward authority, the kingly role in Narnia, and how that changes you, and how authority doesn't make you into a bully and just wants to go start fights in a subway station, but it makes you a little more noble than that. And I understand how they wanted to change that, but I just haven't seen a whole lot that is different from the previous approach. And this quote seems to undergird that. It's like we've got to change it, we've got to update it. We've got to fill in the gaps, and even more than filling in the gaps, we've got to find a new big story that ties it all together. But for Voyage of the Dawn Treader, you already have three big stories. To me, they're Reepicheep's quest, which is closely allied with finding Aslan's country. That's perhaps the biggest one, which, of course, is closely allied with Eustace's transformation. If they get those three right, and I haven't seen anything that contradicts that, at least Eustace will have a good undragoning, a March 2nd Christianity Today article. If they get those three things right, I don't even mind them rehashing the White Witch. But they have to get those three elements right. That will make a good film. That will make a film that honors the Voyage of the Dawn Treader book.
Yes.
Glumpuddle, it's all on you now.
Okay. Well, I have calmed down a little bit since I first read this. Mainly, I would say that my concern is that they're looking at these books, and rather than saying, hey, let's try to take what's great about these books and try to find a way to make that translate to film. It seems to be more about – I was really surprised. It's kind of like what Icarus posted. Like, I was surprised to hear Apted basically admit we're trying to make it more like Harry Potter, or trying to make it more conventional. And it's like, well, rather than saying let's try to make it more like something we've seen, why not make it say – why don't they say, let's try to make this like something we haven't seen? And things that are in the Narnia books, which are classics, are things we haven't really seen on film, especially with the emerging popularity of fantasy. We haven't even seen it. I mean, even Peter Jackson, when he was making Lord of the Rings, you know, he was shopping around, showing people the script, and people were just scared because it was so different from anything we'd seen before. And guess what? He made it, and people loved it because it was so different than anything they had ever seen before. And so to me, it's like, why not just try to say, let's pick a different kind of movie, embrace what makes the book different, instead of – I mean, I was just surprised he actually said that. And in that sense, again, they feel like, oh, yeah, we're trying to take these stories and update them for a modern audience, make them appeal to them more, not taking any risk. It sounds to me like they're trying to say, let's add all this depth. Let's, like, you know, add things and fill in the gaps and that will appeal to a modern audience. And really, I almost feel like they're kind of doing the opposite. They're dumbing it down. They're making the world finite. And that they're sort of missing out on all the subtlety in the book. When he talks about the book C.S. Lewis didn't write, I'm just kind of like, well, there's a reason he didn't write that. It was a very intentional decision. Now, as far as – I don't know. I think one thing that's interesting – one last thought here. I think in the forum, this is bringing out an interesting difference in philosophies of Narnia Webbers of like what's more important, that the films be successful and that Fox and Walden make money so they can make more movies? Or is it more important that they just make faithful adaptations? I personally would rather see just one faithful adaptation than seven kind of sort of faithful adaptations. Now, on the reason why – there's a couple of reasons why I'm not – I mean, I just look at this and go, "This guy, it sounds like Apted doesn't know what he's talking about." But now here's a couple of reasons to hope that this isn't as bad as it sounds. First off, like Wolf posted, I think, he said, if you are going to draw on things that aren't in the books, well, at least you might as well draw on things that he at least mentioned. You know, it could be worse. At least they're not totally picking up stuff. And also the hope that maybe there's typos here and Michael Apted, he does seem like the kind of person – the few times I've heard him speak, it seems like he's not the kind of person who the things he says translates very well to text. And I don't know, maybe he's not the most articulate person either. So there's a couple of reasons to hope this isn't, you know, and I guess I was just hoping for the, oh, I was always hoping that, that the trailer was misleading. And the fact that I hear Apted kind of basically admitting, no, we really are trying to make it more like Harry Potter and stuff is kind of disheartening. So I'm just holding on to the fact that maybe he doesn't mean what it seems like he means. And maybe there are a couple typos in there too. That's all I can hope for, I think.
Well,
there's only one Harry Potter, and he does not share power.
one thing I will mention that I think you hit on Glumpuddle that is very. I think I'm seeing more with this one than the first two. I think it's easy to quickly read through these and think, ah, these are very simplistic books. And if I could say, because they are children's books, but just saying, ah, yes, they're children's books, i.e., you know, they are simplistic
for children.
But the whole, I mean, no matter where you fall in the discussion, the whole fact that there is so much writing with Devin Brown, you know, Michael Ward, and all these different guys trying to analyze all this stuff in
I always like Narnia. To say that with Narnia, the inside is bigger than the outside, and that's what makes it so amazing. Mm-hmm. That there's so much depth in these simple stories. And if I had more time here, I would talk about how that's what the movie Inception's all about, that these you find the simplest form of an idea, and that's the most effective way to really make people respond to it and understand it, even if they're not consciously aware of it.
Right. Well, and we'll – I mean, eventually, just time will tell. We'll find out in December how much they really grasp that about Narnia in general.
And that will be a very interesting podcast, indeed.
Just for the record, I really am kind of leaning. Just for the record, I really am kind of leaning towards. I don't think Apted meant what this makes it seem like he meant. That's kind of the direction I'm leaning right now.
Okay.
But it is fun to try to figure out what else is in that book. Right.
Yeah. You're on our new web.
Yeah. Here, the podcast that we didn't record. we didn't discuss.
There's all kinds of secrets in that podcast we didn't record.
Well, as much as sometimes this is kind of discouraging, I always have a blast, and I want to thank you all for joining me.
Yep. Yeah.
So. Definitely. So you all, take care.
I never thought I would be that happy talking about sad things. So. Glad to be back.
It might not be sad. We don't know. There's a lot of things. Trailers lie. Marketing lies. Maybe even the director lies unintentionally.
Lumpo, I already said that. That was in the comment that I didn't say.
Me too, just for the record. If the movie turns out to actually be awesome, me saying I think it's going to be awesome was in the podcast we didn't record. Just for the record.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you very much, Warrior. Thank you, Dr. Ransom. Thank you, Glumpuddle.
No worries.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.